Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Bills, Ravens, juicy. Five primetime games, four 425 games.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what your football season will look like. A lot of Bills in primetime, and every moment you're not watching the Bills, the Chiefs are on television.
Yep.
Every single moment. The Chiefs have two 1 o'clock games.
In total. Two 1 o'clock games.
Bills have seven
by
comparison. And...
and the Chiefs play on every day of the week except for Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah.
Give them a chance. Maybe they'll end up on a Wednesday somehow, some way.
The Bills don't do that because they don't have a Saturday, we don't think. It doesn't look like the Bills will have a Saturday, right?
Yeah, there's the TBD in Week 18, but that's more for Sunday night anyway, isn't it?
Yes.
And I would be stunned if Bills-Jets isn't like 1 o'clock.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think that's more about, you know... no Saturday. The Bills don't play on a Friday, of course, also.
Yep.
We're going to get that in week one where you're going to watch the Chiefs on a Friday.
It's enough. The Chiefs-ing that happened over the last 24 hours is enough to make me say, as I say, of course the league doesn't fix games for the Chiefs. Of course that's absurd. All of a sudden I'm forced to confront the fact that, I mean, they really seem to want them everywhere, all the time. They have seven primetime games. I thought the limit was six.
Mm-hmm.
Rules are rules, schmools. Let's throw them in a couple more. Anyway, we'll get to that. So how do you like it? How do you like the schedule? Give us a ring. It's finally out. If you're one of these people that says, hey, just let me know when the schedule actually comes out. Hey, it's out. What do you think? The best starting point is, what do you think of Baltimore as the opener? Did we want to do a little better there? Do you like that?
No, I mean it's good. I mean is it too good? Sometimes you get week one and you think, all right, that game's not going to be there because that's too good of an opener. I think the matchup is awesome. I mean, it is maybe one of the toughest challenges in the league for the Bills specifically and for anybody. But it's a little bit of an opportunity for the Ravens, too, more I would say even for the Bills, to kind of, hey, prove that the Bills got away with one in that playoff game.
Revenge game.
Yeah. Because if I were a Ravens fan, I would feel like the Bills got away with one. I would feel like Mark Andrews completely let me down, and my quarterback had a couple of moments in the first half that let me down, and that's it. It's all it took.
Yeah, you'd probably think it was a stupid game. Like, that game got stupid, and we lost, and it probably should have been a better outcome.
You think somebody or two couple guys screwed it up for us. For the Bills, though, and maybe what a Ravens fan wouldn't be thinking about is the litmus test that is the defense going against Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, this Bills defense was opportunistic last year, and they got their result against the Ravens, but how did they do it? They got it by forcing him into a couple of turnovers early in the game. I mean, really only one they forced him into. The other one, he just literally put the ball on the ground. And then you forced a couple turnovers in the second half. Bernard punching the ball out from Andrews. Like, you forced them into mistakes. That's the only way they could succeed on defense last year. I want to be able to see them, like, dominate on defense or be capable of that. So what I'll be hoping for in week one is, all right, Bills, Bosa, and Hoyt won't be
no
on the field,
Hoyt.
I guess, sorry.
No Hoyt, no Ogunjobi.
But Bosa and Landon Jackson and, of course, Hairston and, you know, all the T.J. Sanders, all these defensive moves they've made, drafted free agency. All right, let's see you look good against the Baltimore offense without needing turnovers. Let's see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why they went out and improved that unit so that the next time they play Baltimore in a big, meaningful game, they're not going to need Terrell Bernard to punch the ball out against Mark Andrews because they're just going to force punts.
Yards per play, total yards in that game. I mean, the Bills had a fumble return that got some yardage, so that's a part of it.
Vaughn, how far did Vaughn run? Like 40 yards?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Baltimore had 416 total yards. The Bills had 273.
Okay.
One thing that is forgotten about that day, perhaps, was Josh Allen's stat line that day. Do you remember?
Against Baltimore?
I
can't imagine it was a ton. Like 200 yards and a touchdown passing.
200 yards and a touchdown passing is the guess.
That's my guess, yeah.
Okay. 127 and no touchdowns.
Wow.
127 yards against Baltimore. While
they were up in the whole second half.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
While plenty will say, you know, you want the defense to be dominant. What I'll be looking for that day is, will the Bills' offense look like the 30 points per game offense we saw it look like so many times? Against Baltimore, they scored 27, and they were probably lucky to get 27. They got turnovers, 127 yards. All right, well, did they run the ball exceedingly well in that game? Not really. Not really. James Cook had 67 yards on 17 carries. Against Baltimore, they were, I think, a little, like you said, a little fortunate to get out of it. But whatever. Once you're the playoffs, it's very much who cares who got lucky. Did you win? You know, you don't want to say, well, we were the better team but lost. You'd rather be the worst team and win 100 times out of 100 in the postseason. Regular season, right. You know, if that game happens and it's week one, we're saying, oh, wow, well, hey, the Bills didn't look that great. And Baltimore's probably feeling fine about losing 27-25. Like, all right, well, you know, passed at will, which is kind of how it went. Lamar in that game, 18 of 25 for 254, averaging 10 yards per completion.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, 10 yards per attempt.
I was going to say attempt, probably. Right?
10 yards per attempt for Lamar in that game. Allen was at 5.8.
Well, to the Bills' credit, the way they won that game is how they won a lot of their games last year. Which
turnovers.
But they played a clean game.
Yep.
The Bills played a clean game. They did not make mistakes, big mistakes, and they bet on that guy's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he gifted them a pick early in the game that they probably forced him into a little bit, but he threw the ball right to Taylor Rapp, and they pressured him just enough on another one where he just put the ball on the ground for them. And Josh didn't make those mistakes. So that's the difference. And, of course, Andrews being the difference.
Huge.
Also.
Huge.
So, like, no problem if that's how the Bills are going to beat the Ravens every time. Just you can trust the Bills to play a more clean game than Baltimore. I just – sometimes you're not going to get that. And – to their credit, I think that is how they had to approach last year's playoff game, because I think if you just went toe-to-toe with the Ravens, you might – I mean, that was one of the historically great offenses of the NFL. You go back and look at all NFL seasons and look at what they were yards per play and what they were as a rushing offense especially. And the Ravens were one of the best offenses we've ever seen. And the Bills had a very good offense, but they kind of survived and even more than that, thrived on you never got sacked and you never turned the ball over. And those were the two things you were the best at.
Yep.
And this year, because I just don't know how you'll if you're ever going to be able to count on every single time, every time we play them, we're going to be the team that plays a cleaner game. I'd like to see on both sides of the ball, the Bills stack up against the Ravens. Like, no, talent-wise, we're there with you. Or we're at least close. We're getting close.
You've been looking up also the context of teams that are the best in the league at turnovers and what they do the next year. Like,
yes.
How sustainable that is as an idea.
So I've got that. Since 2015, so you're going back a decade, the list of teams that have led the league in turnovers, every single team that has led the league in turnovers since 2016 has had an increase in turnovers the next year. And I think only one team is repeated as like the league leader in that front. So, yeah, when I talk about, hey, they're probably still going to be really good at not turning the ball over, they're still going to have more than they did last year. I mean, Eight is not the total, is it? Eight might be, I got to find, eight is the differential. Whatever, I had the numbers a week ago. Here it is. It's an average increase of 7 year to year by these teams that have led the league. And some of them are going up by 10. And like Minnesota, that was a couple years ago. They go up by 10 turnovers. And like, that's not actually that bad. That's not what they ended up with. But it's an average increase of 7. There it is. And the teams that have led the league in turnovers, not turning the ball over, I should say, in the last decade, the next year, their average increase is 7 turnovers.
Okay.
So the Bills go up by 7. They're still going to be one of the better teams in the league. But, you know, 7 turnovers, spread them out throughout games. That makes 7, 5, 6, 7 games a lot more difficult just on that one play because those are huge plays. That Lamar play was like, thinking back in the playoff game,
the win percentage drop or whatever it is.
Even more than that, I think the EPA was like a -8 on that play. Some of that's because Vaughn returned it. But
they're
it was,
in field
it was
goal
like
range,
a,
yeah.
Yeah, it was like a -8. It was the most impactful play of the game by EPA.
Well, it's a juicy opponent. And, you know, you mentioned a couple different players in there. Who is fair to ask a lot of? You're talking about Landon Jackson, hoping the Bills' defense can be dominant. I'm thinking, man, a rookie defensive end. What are you asking of him in his first game against Lamar? Welcome to Lamar and Justin Fields to start the season for the Bills. So whichever player on the roster was about to be the scout team quarterback, like that guy's got a job for a couple of weeks to lead off the season. It is a juicy, juicy opener. You know, the thing about proving things and how it all plays out, the Ravens are a little bit like the Chiefs now. Last year, the Bills got thwacked by the Ravens in the regular season and then just took care of them in the playoffs. So let's say Baltimore does it again. 35-10, Derrick Henry runs through their faces. What are we going to say? All right. Long season. That happened early last year. Let's see what happens in the playoffs.
By the way, it was 8 turnovers by the Bills last year in total.
That's incredible.
I did a double take there because I have 8 written down. I'm like, wait, 8 can't be right. No, it was 8, which tied an NFL record.
The one seed conversation, and I've got a comment here at the chat from Buffalo Bills 23 in the YouTube chat. This is right. I think this is one way to say it. Beat Baltimore, the one seed conversation is immediately open. If it's not, I mean, of course, it kind of already is. But if you beat Baltimore, we're going to think they're unbeaten going into the Chief game.
Because their schedule is
soft. Right between those two is light. They have a light schedule. They have a couple of big guns, but they have a pretty light schedule. They have light travel.
Yep.
They have, I mean, it's all kind of laid out for them to have this be the year where they are the top team in the AFC. And should we basically kind of look at it like that, one seed or bust? I don't know what bust means.
For the regular season, but sure, yes. I mean, bust might just mean,
you know, you go to the playoffs as the 3 seed or the 2 seed, whatever. But the goal should be one seed
again. But that bus feels like a letdown. 3 seed might feel like a letdown this year. I mean, you'll still be, you know, fueled up for the playoffs.
Yep.
But yet, you feel like they should do it. What would be the excuse? It's not the schedule. There's nothing with the schedule. I mean, Do they have like a long, they don't even have a long stretch where they're not at home, right? Like they don't have more than two games on the road in a row. They have a three-game homestand. In fact, four of the first five are at home to start the year. Yeah, really, after Baltimore, Howard will pick the Bills later. I mean,
soft.
I don't want to just say like they could be 8-0 going into the Chief game, but it feels like it's not that hard.
One potentially good game, and I'm happy to see this on a Sunday night, the Patriots schedule. So the Patriots and Bills, it's week five.
Yeah.
New England going into that game, if you want it, Raiders, Dolphins, Steelers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have a decent record.
And then Panthers.
They could be 3-1.
It could be 4-0, depending on how good they are. But they could be 3-1. And if the Bills are 4-0 and they're 3-1, all right, Sunday Night Football. It's
when we get to that one, that'll feel like a big game for the, like who's who in the division. A
little bit. That could be your typical Miami game where it's like, all right, let's find out if the division is over in week five.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a nice schedule. I like the spacing out of the teams. The big four are in what, week 1, 9, 14, and 17?
Yeah.
As opposed to last couple years, what was it? Eagles and Chiefs, back-to-back opponents.
Mm-hmm.
They had a stretch of 4 out of 5 were just monster games. Here, you've got a big one, and then you flank every big one by, all right, you know, these other teams might have nice seasons, but you wouldn't expect them to be big ones by then.
Look at it this way. Baltimore is, well, they're not really sandwiched by anything. There's nothing before them, but the Jets are after Baltimore. The Chiefs are sandwiched by Carolina and Miami. Cincinnati is sandwiched by Pittsburgh and New England, and Philly by Cleveland and New York. So, but I will say I don't love where that Philly game is. Week 17.
I've come around an only one way. I think it's a terrible spot for that game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why is that a terrible spot? It's a terrible spot because one of those teams might not need it.
Or both.
Both
seems a little less likely, but it's possible.
Yep. Or both might not need it.
Right.
Or one of them might need it, both of them might need it, and we might be kind of saying, what do I want to do? Go all out? What if I see this team in a month?
Right.
What do I want to show this team?
So like a team that's that good, like how much do I want to, you know, they're big, they're physical. How much do I want to risk injury to go all out? Like, not to say they wouldn't try, but, you know, Joey Bosa in that game.
Yep.
Like, am I going to go into week 17 against the Eagles thinking, well, the division's locked up? And it'll really be dependent on the one seed. Because if they're in full control of the one seed, then maybe it's, all right, a guy like Bosa, I don't really play him in this game. You know, maybe play him like 10 snaps or something. But if I'm tied with Kansas City or tied with Baltimore for the one seed, then maybe there's a discussion to have about, okay, you're going all out.
Yeah, I look forward to the conversation leading into that. It reminds me, last year, the Chiefs locked up the one seed on Christmas. They played the Steelers. Now, you might say the Steelers are a physical team, but I don't think the Steelers were very good last year. So they went out and they just took care of business against a Steeler team that wasn't very good. It really might be the Bills to lock up a one seed or the division or whatever, like that late in the season. Like I when it first came out, my thought was Philly week 17 is a waste. It should be earlier.
Yeah.
But being earlier would just be for entertainment purposes. This would be closer to the playoffs, closer to, I don't know, potential Super Bowl matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. At least it's here. The schedule looks good. It's a nice schedule. There's lots to like about it. 803-0550. Take a look at it. Give us a call. It's finally out. What do you like? What do you not like? Carolina week 8. We like that for a golf trip.
Do we like our Carolina game being Sunday at 1?
Yeah, I think we like that. I mean, Monday Night Football for that was an idea just to, you know, extend the week there. They got Monday Night Football in Atlanta, which I think is not too bad.
Yeah.
All right. A Monday night game against Atlanta, a Thursday night game in Houston. Maybe the Atlanta game being on Monday night makes that trip a little better. Maybe not. I've already got an invite to go down to Atlanta from our former program director, Andy Roth. Let me know if you're in town.
Uh-huh.
He's down in Atlanta. So, you know, the whole thing is it's a nice schedule. I think the story is Baltimore. Start the season, how you ended last season at the stadium, and that's Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah, I would mostly agree with that. They put the Chief game, are we just never going to get anything different, by the way? It's always going to be, you know, early November, late October at 4:25. There's been no change with that for 5 years now. I mean, the last time these two teams played that was at night even was the COVID year.
Yeah.
So.
Well, last the playoff game wasn't at night.
Okay, maybe the playoff games have been more mixed around.
Yeah.
But when the schedule comes out, Bills Chiefs is going to be late October or early November at 425 every single time.
And last year, 425, it was dark. You're right. It depends on how dark it is.
Yeah. So I was wondering if that might change it up, but I guess just go with what works on that front.
Yep.
And week 9 is just late enough to where, again, like I'm going to be thinking with this schedule and with their regular season, like you get the top seed. It's the one thing you haven't done. And for Kansas City, like that game being in week 9, I think it's just late enough where that feels like a race between the two of them, and both would still be in it almost no matter what. Neither team would be like multiple games ahead by week 9. I think it would be a little surprising if you had that. So I was a little interested where that game came in was basically the same.
803-0550. In the Bills game in the playoffs against the Ravens, they led at halftime 21-10.
Yeah. Yeah.
And won 27-25.
Mm-hmm. Couple field goals.
Got intense. 803-0550, your number. All right. So Howard picks the Bills coming up at 8 o'clock. Sal at 7 to break it all down. There are a number of interesting things about the schedule for different teams. The Lions' home schedule is crazy good. The Giants' season ends in the first month.
Mm-hmm.
They have murderers
row.
Yeah,
they're going to be toast.
Jets and Steelers as an opener.
Yeah.
That is potentially a double revenge game. Justin Fields and Aaron Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
if Rodgers signs with the Steelers at any point. So that one's pretty good.
Yep. How about the Vikings getting so many national window games?
Yeah, with a rookie quarterback.
I mean, they're week one Monday Night Football, right? They've got did they max out on primetime games? They were at least where the Bills were. But week one against Chicago is the Monday Night game, which thought was a little bit interesting. By the way, the Bills, if we didn't mention this, their Monday night game against Atlanta is a doubleheader. There's only three Monday night doubleheaders all year. One of them is while Bills and Falcons are taking place at 7 on October 13th. You'll have Chicago and Washington at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that.
That's a good game.
Yep.
All right, the Bills schedule is out. The NFL schedule is out. The Bills open up against the Baltimore Ravens at home, week one, Sunday night football. They end the regular season against the New York Jets, the same team they opened Highmark Stadium with, this current Highmark Stadium with, back in 1973. That game, the Bills won 9-7 on the strength of 3 field goals. I hope it's a better game this time around. I know the joke is there to ask Howard Simon about that game, if he remembers it. He would have been old enough to remember it, but I don't think you were living in Buffalo at the time. Howard Simon joins me on the West Her Hotline right now. Do you remember, what's your first memory of Rich Stadium, Highmark Stadium, and the Ralph, and whatever you want to call it?
By the way, since that game, the Jets still haven't found a quarterback.
That's right, yes.
My first memory of Highmark, okay. Well, my first game I went to was in 1989 when I was working in the Falls. I had a chance to go see, I want to say it was a Monday Night Football game against the Broncos.
Yeah, sounds
and,
right.
Man. But now remember, I was here for college. I was here from 80 to 84, so I was familiar with the stadium. I mean, I knew everything about it. I just never went to a game until 89, and I was just like, the atmosphere was amazing. But I was aware of the significance. I mean, but my very first game in town, my freshman year in 1980, I think I have this right. If my memory fades, I apologize, but I think the opener that year was the streak breaker against Miami. So if I've got that right, my first impression of a Bills game at Rich Stadium was people tearing down the goalposts. And I thought, really? For game one of the season, these people really love their football.
Yeah, well, you came in and watched a game after they had lost 20 straight games to the Miami Dolphins. We love our football, but they hated the Miami Dolphins so much is what it was.
Well, and so did I. Remember, I grew up a Jets fan in the 70s.
That's right.
Everybody hated the Dolphins then, but I didn't understand the streak. Now I do, of course, but I had no idea why. Oh, that's why they, okay, 20 straight. I totally understand that. But I always thought, like, the first thing that struck me was just the parking lot, that Monday night game I went to. I went with somebody I worked with at the time, and we got there early, and we're in the parking lot. I mean, you know, tailgating, all that stuff. It was just an amazing atmosphere. And then it would have been, I think it would have been Kelly against Elway. And the game itself was really cool, and how loud the place was. I just thought, I never really went to a lot of football games growing up. I might have seen the Jets play once or twice at the Meadowlands, but it would have been exhibition games too. So that was on, I think that was the first regular season NFL game I had actually ever attended in person.
First regular season game I went to was 2 years before that in the strike season, 1987. Patriots at Bills late in the year.
Replacement game?
No. It was later in the year, and the Bills were it was Kelly's second year, and they needed to win like the last two to actually make the playoffs, you know, and they didn't. They lost that game. It was in the snow, but that was the first one for me. I want to go back to that 1973 game against the Jets. I'm looking at the box score. You know who the quarterback was for the Jets? It was Joe Ferguson for the Bills.
I'm trying to think if Namath would have still been there.
He was not.
Okay.
It was.
There were so many bums that came in after him.
It was a guy named Al Woodall, who I have never actually heard of.
I think he wore number 18.
All right. Very good. Now, what is amazing, though, looking at this box score, first of all, the leading rusher in the game was OJ, 24 for 123. A guy named John Riggins, 12 for 43 for the Jets.
Oh, he was really good with the Jets. Like one of my brothers, it's probably still packed away somewhere. One of my brothers had a Riggins jersey, a green Riggins jersey. He was really good. Of course, he goes on to have eventual Hall of Fame career going to Washington. But yeah, a lot of people don't remember he actually began as a Jet.
Yeah, he did, and he's a Hall of Famer. A
long time ago.
I remember him with the then Redskins, John Riggins. But he played for the Jets, and then he went to Washington after that. All right, so they end they end the regular season with the Jets, and obviously, you know, I think that that's pretty poetic, and I'm sure that the Bills and the NFL kind of, you know, talked about that a little bit, how they want to do it. But the opener is competitively really juicy, right? What did you think about when you saw Ravens at Bills Sunday Night Football?
Yeah, I'm good with it. You know, I used to be, I very much always lived in the, give me like the easiest game on the schedule to open the season, but that's fine. You know, you got the whole offseason to prepare for them. Why not? You know what? If you're wondering, look, the big offseason story was, how are the Bills going to fix some holes on the defense? Well, heck, let's find out in game one, right? Let's see what they do against Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. And, you know, they're a really good receiving core, and they added DeAndre Hopkins, and they have Mark Andrews. So I'm fine with it. I used to be, like I said, I always wanted like a quote gimme, but I'm good with this matchup. I just don't like waiting, you know, all day long to get the Sunday Night Football salad. I already scheduled my midday nap in my calendar in my phone for that day.
Yeah, it'll be exciting and fun, no doubt about it. And as I pointed out earlier, though, Howard, you're talking about easier games, quote-unquote easier games, early in the season. They do get that after this game.
After that game,
they play a six-game stretch of teams that combined last year went 35-67. Not one made the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the first thing that jumped out to me at the schedule after checking how many night games. But the first thing was, look at the schedule, because a year ago was the exact opposite, right? I don't remember the exact order. But remember when the schedule came out, we all looked at the first six games and thought, yeah, they might go 3-3. Honestly, I'm good with 4-2, right? Because there was just a crazy stretch of games. So this is the opposite. I think you look at that, I'm sure there are some Bills fans who think they're going 7-0. I think that'd be really hard to do. Yeah. I don't remember what I did today. I think I picked 6-1, maybe. Whatever. You could look at that and go, you should be worst case, you could say 5-2 with the Chiefs game coming up.
What did you think about the interesting, maybe not thought about primetime matches, matchups at Atlanta on a Monday night and at home against the Patriots on a Sunday night?
Yeah, well, the only thing I like about Atlanta is it's 7:15. Sal, we're always good with earlier night games, so we like that. Yeah, I don't – honestly, I thought, to me, the Patriots are still a – not just from the Bills' perspective, but just looking at New England, I think they'll be improved. But to me, they're definitely still a Sunday 1 o'clock team. Like, there's no reason I need to see the Patriots in prime time. I like Drake May. I think he's an exciting young quarterback. I do think – I'm not a huge Vrabel guy, but I think they will be better with Vrabel as their head coach. But I am not at a point where I think – I mean, they should still – I think they should still finish last in the division, but I just don't see them as a primetime lure right now. But, hey, whatever. Put them in at night, put them at day, put them at 4 o'clock in the morning, the Bills will still beat them.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the Patriots, the three primetime games they got, they put them against the two teams in the biggest market, both New York teams, the Jets and Giants, and then the team with the NFL MVP. So what I think you're saying is right, which is – that's normally a 1 o'clock team, but let's give them some love. They got a young quarterback. It is Boston. It is New England. But let's put them in a game where we know people are going to get to the TV sets.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm sure there's still some NFL fans who like watching New England get their butts kicked. After all the suffering they laid on everybody with Brady, there still might be an appeal of eyes will tune in just to hope and watch New England lose after all that success they had. So that might maybe that's way down on the list, but that might be a factor.
All right, so before we get to a quick baseball talk here, Yankees, Mets this weekend, the last thing about the schedule, holidays. Bills did not get one. We're going to talk about that in a second. I thought, if you would have asked me a month ago, even a few weeks ago, I really thought the Bills were in line to get either Thanksgiving night, Black Friday, or Christmas, most likely Christmas night. They didn't get any of that. Are you happy that they're not at any of those games?
I've never been a fan of playing on holidays. Now, it's not as big a deal now that I'm not working. But when I was working full-time, I had no desire to see them play on Thanksgiving, and I would have had no desire to see them play on Christmas. I like family, holiday, not working, put the games on. Black Friday, to me, Sal, Black Friday is a nothing holiday. I don't go out shopping. I don't consider it a holiday. You want to put them on Black Friday, that's fine. But I'm very, very happy they're not playing on Thanksgiving and Christmas. To me, that's a day for you to be with your family.
Howard Simon on the West Her Hotline. All right, Howard. The Mets look great right now. I'm not trying to jinx them or anything. They really do. They look great.
What are you doing?
28-16. They're playing 6-36 baseball. Better than the Yankees. Yankees are 25-18, but the Yankees are still having a nice season. They're in first place in the AL East. What's been going right for the Mets? Why are they here right now?
Pitching. The hitting's coming, and Alonso is just out of his gourd right now. But it's mostly starting pitching. I mean, those guys have been – I should have saved the stat. Go check the stat on what their combined starting pitchers' ERA is. It's minuscule. And the bullpen's been good. The hitting came around – it was slow. It's actually – they're still one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. They are down near the bottom. But they do get the occasional home run. But it was pitching that was driving them. Lindor's still Lindor. Soto's only hitting, I don't know, maybe 255 or so, but his bat has been better lately. But Alonso is out of his mind. I mean, he's hitting over 300. He's just doing everything. So the pitching was there. The hitting is coming around. And they've had kind of a, you know, they've had some teams in the schedule that were eminently beatable to this point. So that's helped out as well.
The Mets are the only team in all of baseball with an under 3 team ERA, actually, 284. Yeah, Yankees, it would be tough, but how about this one? The Yankees are the only team in baseball, the Yankees have the lowest batting average against them in baseball. Only 209 teams are hitting against the Yankees, which is incredible.
That's really good. Yeah,
this could be a really good pitching matchup. In comparison, by the way, 230 against the Mets, which is also really well. What concerns you about the Mets that you've seen so far? Anything?
Two words. Oh, about the Mets? Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about concerns about the Yankees, because I would intentionally walk Aaron Judge every single plate appearance.
We'll get to the series, and we'll get to that in a second. What about the Mets and anything you've seen that you're like, you know what, you said maybe pitching isn't sustainable, but it's been great so far. Is there anything you think, you know what, I haven't loved how this has gone?
Clutch. They are leaving runners on base. I mean, I went to the game Monday night against the Pirates. They ended up a very bad Pirates team, by the way. They ended up walking off with an Alonso sack fly. But they were getting – and they played Skeens, too. Like, they were getting guys on first and second. first and third. They were putting guys on base against Skeens, and they just didn't come up with a clutch hit. They ended up winning against the bullpen. So if there's an like a work first, yeah, I don't think the pitching is sustainable. I feel like they're going to come back down to earth a little bit. Clay Holmes, by the way, thank you very much, has been great. So I don't know that that's going to stay where it is. They should get a couple guys off the injured list, including Sean Manaea, who was big down the stretch last year. And they just need to hit a little better. Soto, obviously, is under what his average should be. He should be hitting better than where he is. And that would be it. I think that would honestly, leaving guys on base, let's hit a little bit better in clutch situations, and that would be the one thing. And they've been great at home, so-so on the road, but they've been dominant at Citi Field.
And that's where this this series is. Starts tomorrow night. It goes for three games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All right, you brought him up. I mean, have you ever seen what Aaron Judge is doing for a two-month stretch like this? This is really, truly incredible what he's doing.
I saw a stat earlier. What's today's date? They all blend in. Earlier this week.
May 15th.
I saw that. Thank you. That I mean, day of the week. What is it? Oh. Wednesday? Thursday? It's Thursday.
Today's Thursday.
Trust me, when you get to my age and you're not working full time, every day you will wake up and go, what day of the week is it again?
There you go.
There was a stat on Aaron Judge somebody had posted on X earlier this week. In his last 162 games, mm-hmm. he had 63 home runs, I think 62 or 63 home runs, 65, and 163 runs batted in. 65 home runs, 163 ribbies over his previous 162 games.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely obscene. Like, those are video game numbers. I'm not kidding you, Sal. I wouldn't pitch to him. I would intentionally walk or intentionally walk, pitch around him. Don't give him anything. If you don't want to put up four fingers, don't throw anything in the strike zone, because I don't want him single-handedly destroying the Mets this weekend. Make somebody else beat you.
I mean, it is amazing. So he leads in every, you know, Triple Crown category. He leads in everything pretty much, right? He's the leader right now in home runs, RBIs, batting average, .412. The next closest batter in all baseball is Freddie Freeman at .362. That's the gap right now. It's a 50-point gap right now.
And you might have thought his numbers would go down because Soto's not in the lineup this season, right? And so I mean, it's amazing what he's doing. And I think the series is in the Bronx this weekend, right? I think it's at Yankee Stadium.
I believe it's at Citi.
All right. Well, that's a little more challenging in terms of hitting rather than Yankee Stadium, but. Yeah, I just wouldn't throw a ball anywhere near the strike zone against this guy.
Oh, wait, you're right. I'm sorry. I had it wrong. I apologize.
No, you know what?
I'm sorry.
In New York this week, a lot of talk, of course, about how are the Yankee fans going to treat Juan Soto come tomorrow.
Okay. I don't know why. I thought I saw something. And you know how when you look at something and have the team at the bottom is the home team? And I think I saw something where the Mets were listed on the bottom. And that's why I assumed
only because I knew in New York the talk was about Soto. What kind of reception is he going to get? And I'm sure he's going to get booed.
Yes. It will be at Yankee Stadium. And these are three games. They start tomorrow night, 7:05. They play tomorrow, and then they play Saturday at 1:05. Sunday, of course, 7:10, it's the night game, right? It's always night game when they play each other on Sunday.
Right. Yeah, it should be a good series. Look, I think, you know, the Mets, I think, are still, they're going to have to deal with the Phillies. I think the Phillies are a really good baseball team. I think for the Yankees, honestly, if you don't win the AL East, there should be an investigation. Because it's just not that, no offense, I don't mean this as a slap at the Yankees. Their Yankees are still a good team. But, you know, the Jays are disappointing. The Sox have had some really big injuries. The Orioles aren't playing at a level where they were last year. And then, you know, the Rays. I mean, you should win that division.
Hey, before I let you go, last night, Maple Leafs did not look good. Are you happy to see this? Like, do you want to see the Maple Leafs actually advance? Or is this like, we hate the Maple Leafs here in Buffalo?
Oh, no. I'm a very angry, bitter, jaded, nasty sports fan. I want them to crash and burn. I thoroughly enjoy. I was busy last night, so I didn't get a chance to watch the game. I tuned in, and I literally turned it on. It was 5-0, and Florida just scored to make it 6-0. And they're showing, like, the people outside wearing all the Leafs jerseys. They're showing people leaving the arena. And, I mean, I hate it because that's kind of petty for a sports fan to be that way.
Oh, I get it.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. I totally want them to crash and burn. I mean, if they win the first two games of the series against the, you know, Florida, the defending champions, and then if they could lose four straight after that, and you come home for game five in a 2-2 series, granted, I know their starting goalie's hurt, but you come home and lay that kind of an egg last night, oh my God, it's hilarious. Yeah.
I'm with you on all that, Howard. Hey, man, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. We'll always catch up. We're not betting on the Subway Series this year. I still owe you lunch. I promise we're going to get to that. But I have a feeling it could be the Mets. Mets taking at least two, maybe three in this one.
The bet actually draws interest. So it's not just lunch. You owe me lunch and dinner at this point. And
hey,
it takes, I'm going to have a week's worth of meals from you at some point.
The more time I get to spend with you, the better. I always love it, buddy. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Sal. Nice to talk to you.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What's the one matchup you're looking forward to the most in the Bills regular season? And tell us why. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. That's the number to jump on board with us. And we go to Dennis in North Carolina. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Steve. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Doing good.
Hey, so I got two games. First of all, I really want to see Buffalo beat Baltimore. I mean, that's like the best game, in my opinion. And the second game is against Panthers, because the reason is when I first moved to North Carolina, my brother-in-law, he's a Panther fan, and he told me then that Buffalo suck and that they would never be good and all that. And every year since then, Buffalo is better than the Panthers. And
are you guys going to go to that one together?
Well, no, because he doesn't like me because, you know, Buffalo and Tennessee is better teams than his team.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Hey, Chris, can you tell me how to look up? I tried to look up today the Bills YouTube, and I don't see that.
Okay. So what you can do is just go to YouTube.com, and then in the search bar, you should be able to just type in Buffalo Bills YouTube channel. And a listing should come up that'll get you there. So just type it into the search window on the if you're looking for the show, you want to look for the One Bills Live playlist. That's another way to listen to us on Rerack if you can't listen to us live. So hopefully that helps. But yeah, just type it in the search bar on YouTube.com.
People forget last year the Baltimore Ravens lumped the Bills up by like 27 in week four. It was 37-10 or something like that?
35-10, Ravens over Bills.
And then in the playoff game, don't forget, it was like two drops and a fumble by the tight end, Andrews, for the Baltimore Ravens, or the Ravens win that game.
A fumble by Lamar, yeah.
Yeah. Not just Lamar, but the fumble that Benford caused after Andrews caught the ball.
Bernard.
And then the drop pass on the two-point conversion
right
at the end of the game. But the Ravens, there's no question the Ravens and their fans feel like they gave Buffalo that playoff game last year.
Yep.
So, and they've got, you know, they've got an argument. Nevertheless, I mean, who knows better than the Bills how small those margins are in the playoffs? You know, I mean, the Bills are a fourth down spot away from having a chance to win. The Ravens are a drop pass.
Yep. Well, that would have tied the game. Bills are still getting the ball back after that.
Right.
With 1:33 left.
You got to think, you know, those are two games, or that game there, you got to think, man, that's the Ravens got to be thinking about that.
Oh, so, yeah. I'll tell you right now.
It's going to be rough.
The big litmus test for Buffalo's defense is going to be the game against the Ravens and the game against the Chiefs, because you'd spent a lot of assets trying to make your defense what you feel it needs to be to get over the hump. How much is Patrick Mahomes affected with the pass rush? How much is Derrick Henry neutralized by a bigger, beefier defensive line?
Yeah.
Those are two major litmus tests for Buffalo's defense on the schedule this season.
I would make that, and I made this argument earlier as well, the Philly game, if it would have happened like opening weekend, if the Bills get Philly opening weekend.
Which they can't, because we know Philly's in the kickoff game.
Right, well, they can't. But the storyline would have been, what kind of Super Bowl would this have been? Hmm. You know, would the Bills have given the Eagles a better game in the Super Bowl than the Chiefs were able to, because their offensive line disintegrated at the face of that rush? That's the storyline. Now, if this game with Philly happens like at the end of the season, all that's washed away. Nobody's going to remember that. It's going to be, you're going to have this whole regular season to reframe the narrative. It'll be a completely different storyline for the game. So whenever that Philly game happens, we'll have a lot to do with how we perceive it. Because right now we're talking about Baltimore and Kansas City, and you forget the world champions are on the schedule too, or not forget, but you know what I mean? There's two other games that we're looking at just to kind of get there.
Right. Let's go to Bobby in Buffalo next. What's up, Bobby?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Listen, I'm looking at the Bills schedule and I'm looking at the question. One matchup that I'm most looking forward to. Well, first of all, number one, I think we all look forward to the Kansas City Chiefs game, because, you know, myself personally, they should switch the Kansas City Chiefs from the AFC West over to the AFC East, okay, because I see the Bills go head-to-head with them every single year. And every year when those two teams meet, it's a battle. It is certainly a battle. Okay, I'm definitely looking forward to that. The other game I'm looking forward to is the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay, because I'm looking forward to two of those games, because, you know, when you have two teams that played in the Super Bowl, the Bills playing both teams that been in the Super Bowl. Now, to me, on the schedule, that is absolutely great. I mean, that is so great. And another game I'm looking forward to seeing the Bills play, I'm looking forward to Josh Allen getting revenge on Joe Burrow. Because remember that year when Cincinnati came in?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that year when Cincinnati came in, the divisional playoffs, and when they beat the Bills? Yep, I'm looking forward to that game as well. Okay, I'll let you guys answer my questions.
Yeah,
God bless. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks Bobby, for the call. Yeah, I'm telling you, man, there is an undercurrent of vitriol and hate for the Bengals. And it's not just because of the fact that the Bengals have beaten the Bills in three of the four matchups that have happened in the McDermott era, including counting the playoff game, but it's the way in which the Bengals carried themselves through all that garbage. The Hamlin game ultimately gets canceled, not just postponed, and it throws the league in a place where they have to determine proper playoff seeding with two teams that are in the playoff race who are going to have one fewer game played. And the way that was adjudicated in the eyes of Cincinnati was unfairly, because they were winning that game. And then the attitude they had, just this brash, you know, kind of approach to, well, you got to play us, and, you know, we're going to, you know, do this, do that, and wipe the floor with you. And, you know, just a very braggadocious bravado that they had didn't rub too well with Bills fans. And then they unceremoniously wax him 27-10. I think it's left a bad taste in the mouths of Bills fans. And then the next year they lost the game in Cincinnati
18-24.
Yeah, 24-18. And so that only added to the fuel. And there is a detectable undercurrent of vitriol and hatred for the Bengals and their fans.
And I'll say this too, a healthy level of respect. People know they're a good football team. They're hard to stop. They're hard to beat, and they're in a tough division. That's a dog eat dog division with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. You go back, the Bills beat them. The last time the Bills beat them was in 2019, where they beat them 21-17 in Week 3.
That's their only win in the McDermott era.
That's the only time Sean McDermott has beaten them, and that was in Buffalo. That was when, you know, Andy Dalton was quarterback. That was the Andy Dalton reunion tour, right? When he came back and everybody was in love with Andy because he ended the drought with the touchdown pass to
against
Tyler Boyd.
Ravens,
let's go, fourth down. Let's go. All this, we're all coming full circle here now. But they're a hard team to beat. People know it, and we haven't been able to do it. And there's been a couple of things that have happened that have added a little gasoline onto that.
Yep. No question about it. We go to Chuck in Hamburg next. What's up, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Eagles game. You always want to see how you stack up against a champion. And should we meet them in the Super Bowl, they're the only team from the NFC East that haven't beat us in the Super Bowl. Mm. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
Thanks for that. That's the only team that – what do you – it sounded – did that not sound like – am I too sensitive that Chuck said it's their turn to beat us in the Super Bowl? Or?
Well, I don't – I didn't take it that way. I understand why you would. But I want to draw a parallel here because he made an interesting point that I think you can lend a lot of credence to here, because he talked about, hey, measuring stick game against the defending Super Bowl champs, you might play him again in the Super Bowl if you get that far at the end of the year as well. You did that in 90, when you guys played the Giants in the regular season. It was largely being billed even then as a potential Super Bowl matchup. It ended up being so.
Right.
Granted, some of the players were a little bit different. Giants didn't have their starting quarterback. But what did you take from the first meeting with the Giants, knowing full well if you got that far, you might see them again?
Well, you knew we had a lot of respect for them, no question. And even in the few short weeks that led up to that, things changed a little bit for both teams. Certainly, Hostetler was their quarterback, not Phil Sims. That kind of thing, obviously. But don't forget, too, that was at a point when we absolutely plowed through the playoffs. I mean, 51-3 in the AFC Championship game.
Right.
So we were
humming.
We were humming. And supremely confident. So it was a little – in the run-up to that Super Bowl, we had changed a little bit in our attitudes and stuff like that. And I'm sure they had too. Certainly with – and that was a staff with Bill Parcells, the head coach, Bill Belichick as the defensive coordinator, and Tom Coughlin was on that staff. So there's a few Super Bowls left in that tank.
And probably three Hall of Fame coaches when all is said and done.
And there was – and on both clubs, I mean, both sides, I mean, there was a handful of Hall of Famers playing out there. One of the greatest ever defensive players in Lawrence Taylor, and another one on our side in Bruce. And Cornelius Bennett, who's that kind of caliber, and Thurman and Andre, and the, you know, go down the list. All those guys. So that was it was one of those historic games. It was a the ultimately close game, and I think to this day I still think it was the best Super Bowl ever played. And I hate to say it like this, but it's really true. The reason I think that was the best game ever was because Scotty missed the kick. If he makes it, it's just another game you win. But like Adam Vinatieri, he's done it. We've seen kickers make the kick, make the kick. There you win. It's all happy. It was the greatest game because Scott missed the kick, and it's unique in that. And not that there haven't been other games.
I do remember.
Lost.
I was in college at the time, and I do remember people saying that might have been the greatest Super Bowl game ever played. Right after that game, and you say, "Oh, well, maybe there's some recency bias." There's probably still a fair amount of people that would still consider it such.
It's one of the good ones. I mean, certainly that there have been overtime Super Bowls now, but they ended a little bit nondescript, But the Patriots,
The only one that comes close to that one for you guys, I would say, would be the Patriots Seahawks one. When they step in front of the Russell Wilson pass at the goal line,
certainly
that ended. And even still, there was a minute left on the clock for the Patriots to kill it.
Right. So that all of that goes in to it. But that's interesting that he brings that up. He's right. I mean, we lost to the Cowboys twice, the Redskins, and the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Philly's the only team that hasn't seen us in a Super Bowl in the AFC.
Let's get there and prevent the NFC sweep. How about that?
A little bit transpired between me and Zach. We've tried to keep it as least amount personal as possible, but at some point in this process, it becomes personal. Being sent 30 days before mandatory camp or however many days it is, that if I don't show up, I will be fined, alludes to the fact that something won't get done in that time frame. With the lack of communication post-draft, made it evidently clear for my party that I had to inform that this might not work out. And that's unfortunate.
Ooh, I like that. Trey Hendrickson of the Bengals. I've never thought about this exact thing before, but when you get a warning so far in advance of what's going to happen if you don't get a thing done, that would piss me off too.
Yeah. Especially if you're not getting what you want. You're not even getting fed dropped breadcrumbs alluding to what you want, right? Like it's not enough or really no communication about a contract. And, by the way, just so you know, this is out there. Yeah, that would set me off.
I mean, in my case, if I get I need you to get this done by X, which is the end of summer, I will be annoyed by that. But I understand why it's being said. I have to admit, I get it. And I get upset, but I really have no right to.
It's a reasonable enough time frame.
Because I might have a reputation for putting everything off. So
right.
I understand why you're telling me, honey, that this needs to be done, and you're giving me enough time, and it really shouldn't be upsetting to me. But maybe Hendrickson has never given the Bengals any reason. It's a different situation. It's a negotiation, and they're just basically warning him, if you don't come in by 30 or 40 days, whatever his number was just then, you're going to get fined. And why would they say that to him so far in advance?
Right. Why would you think he doesn't know that?
Or that? I mean,
right. I mean, there's that. He's been in the league a long time. I think he knows how it works. It sounds like, hey, just so you know, the GM's not calling with a new contract offer. He's not talking to your guy, and you've got 30 days to figure out, you're going to have to come here or you're going to start getting fined. So it does feel like a line in the sand from the organization through the coach. That's how it could be perceived anyway. I don't know. Maybe Zach Taylor just sent out it's a mass text to the entire team. Reminding them, hey, you have to be here. Here are the dates. If you don't show up, you'll be fined. plan your travel vacation schedules accordingly.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But
this is a special case. This is a guy that you know is in. So you might want to not just include him in that and maybe make it a little more direct, or just not include him at all.
It doesn't sound like everybody got the same message.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like the Browns drafting Shedeur Sanders and just sitting there clapping. And, you know, you have to acknowledge they drafted everybody else and they had the same reaction to everybody else. Like they looked maybe like they were watching it from a prison or something and were not able to emote. There would have been lashings. There would have been punishment. So, yeah, I mean, Henderson doesn't sound good there. Steve is with us. Hello, Steve.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to give a little perspective on the schedule. I'm a out-of-towner, and, you know, we've been talking about getting one more home game, you know, before they close the new stadium. We've been talking about it since last year, and we're waiting to, you know, plan that one last trip up there, and we're really curious what that's going to do to the secondary ticket prices for everybody out there, you know, in Bill's universe that feels that they need to get that one last home game experience, especially, you know, a lot of us haven't been back up, you know, 5-10 years. You know, we catch them on the road when they're down in our town, but I'm really concerned that some of these ticket prices are going to be, they're going to jump more than people think.
For the last game.
Or maybe all season? You're thinking maybe, Steve, it makes sense that it would be, you know, it's a market-driven business, and the market should be a little more interested, I think, because it is the last time you get to do it. It's not a facet of this I have thought about. I mean, I do know that there are plenty of people who come to every game from far away. We've heard from them over the years, people that drive from North Carolina every weekend to come watch Bills football when they're at home. It makes sense that if you haven't been, especially if you haven't been in a while and want to see it one more time, maybe there's, you know, a lot more people thinking the same thing, then that could drive the prices up, I suppose.
Well, it would. I mean, the playoffs kind of save you, but that won't be a cheap ticket either. I don't know. Like I have to admit a couple things. One, the stadium piece is not so important to everybody. Like it's really sort of a manufactured thing, event, and they're just moving across the street, and that'll be amazing and exciting. So it's not like everybody is going to think that that's a huge deal. Like some people are just not wired like that. I am somebody who is, and I am somebody also who is obsessed with endings. Everything to me is like, is this the last time? I'm not everything. Is this the last time I'm doing this? Mm-hmm. I will often be distracted, and I don't think in a healthy way, by the thought, like whatever I'm doing, this is me doing it for the last time. I'm sort of like that. And so especially if I were someone that went to a lot of games, I have in my life, it would be to the point that this season, which otherwise is just like last year and previous years in how it's about winning a championship and maybe they can actually do it, this year the finality of the stadium would distract me. And say last year was it. And who do they, the Patriots was a road game. Who did they play before that? The Jets, right? Were the Jets maybe the last regular season home game last year? They won 40-14. Maybe that was it was 40-0 at one point. And that's a day where the playoffs are coming. Say it's the last year of the stadium. You're like, all right, well, this is special. I mean, it is anyway, but it's extra special because it's the last regular season game ever here. And it won't be the last game, period, but there's still that. And it's a win, it's a blowout, it's Aaron Rodgers, it's like all these sort of special things that will go down in history. But, you know, like if that happens this year, think about it. The playoffs come along and that takes precedence. And I had to think about, like, what game is it? Maybe you didn't remember what game it was out there. Like, just, oh, yeah. So the playoffs come along and it's Denver in the wild card and the Bills are a pretty good favorite. And you're out there and like, okay, well, here we go, the playoffs. Man, this might be the last time I'm ever in here. If they lose this game.
Yeah.
And like it I think it breeds more of a thought toward losing. Like it's just that if this is it, and you know, you don't really want that. they beat Denver, and then it's Baltimore the next week, and those teams are sort of on par with each other, and like, all right, well, did we know that the following week would be away? I think we did. Kansas City had already won, so you knew if it's the last year, like that night, you know, is it. Win or lose, that's the last game ever to be played there. And it just like adds...
Yeah, there would have been a lot more anxiety about the way that game, the, you know, right down to the end, the drop 2-point conversion, everything I think is ratcheted up if you're wired that way. And I happen to be similar enough to you in this way to say that, yeah. So it's part of the reason why I even said yesterday, like I doubt that the finale will be the last game there. I mean, they've had a home playoff game each of the last four seasons now, right? Or is it even five now?
I think it's five.
Okay. So, you know, we've grown to expect that. We shouldn't necessarily think it's guaranteed, but, you know, you go in thinking that. I want as easy an opponent for the final game as possible. Like, I want it to be a good memory, right? I don't know that I'm obsessed with endings, but I'm thinking about that ending, and... like, give me a division game. It doesn't even matter who it is. I'd prefer the Jets because they were the first regular season game in the stadium, and that also happens to be maybe the most tomato can-ish team on your schedule. So that would work really well for me. But it's like, it's rooted in a fear of the memory being tarnished in some way. That I'm here one last time. This guy is maybe he's going to come with his family from wherever. He didn't say where he was coming from. But people are going to come from far away for the final Bills game in the stadium, the regular season game, the one they know they can buy a ticket to in, you know, when the schedule gets revealed or whenever single game seats go on sale, whatever, when the secondary market starts being available. And you're going to do that. You're going to come here and you're going to want, even if there's playoff games a week later or 2 weeks later, you're probably not making that trip again. You're going to want that to be a good memory. That was the motivation behind me, like wishing for the Jets at the end, not just the synergy part, but they're a good opponent for this because you want it to be a special day that isn't marred by a loss to somebody.
It'll just be so interesting how up in the air the ending will be because of the playoffs. If you can imagine 2 years ago being the last year of the stadium, that was the year they were 6-6 at one point. And they get to 9-6. And in week 17, they played the Patriots at home on New Year's Eve. That was the home finale. They won a relatively close game against New England. But you leave that day, you wouldn't know if that was it. There'd be a chance, but that's the year where the next week they go to Miami.
Right, you would have left that day not even knowing for sure that they were going to be in the playoffs.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, there was a fair chance that that would have been the last game there. And so, like, that would be really on your mind if you are somebody that cares about that, which I think is most of us. And then the Bills go to Miami. Had they lost to Miami, I think they would have gone back there the next week, but there's no home game coming.
Right.
If they don't win the game in Miami, which was a close game, they won on a punt return. So that if that's the last year of the stadium, that's kind of weird. But it turns out that they do end up coming back, and that's Kansas City. If that's the last year of the stadium, the loss to the Chiefs is it. And then, you know, the way it's going over the years will be like, yeah, it made sense. That probably is how it should have ended. That's fitting.
Right.
So you think about any of these other years where there is like a playoff expectation. All the Bills have to, listen to me now, like this is nothing. All the Bills have to do to guarantee a home playoff game in this, the real last year of the stadium, is win the division. No matter what, they don't have to be the one seed. They don't have to be anything more than better than Miami, Jets, Patriots. So if they're that, then there will definitely be at least one home game in the playoffs. And then whatever you want to do with the regular season, just do it. It might be over like it has been last year, other years. When was the division either literally locked up or realistically locked up last year. Like, there were 5 weeks left in the season. When they beat San Francisco, that was the end of the race.
That was the clinching moment. Yeah, I think six games left. San Francisco game, that was December 1st.
That was December 1st. They had 5 games left after that. And the whole time you would have known, okay, this is the last regular season, but there'll be more. That's right.
Yeah.
And there were 2 games.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds! Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Baltimore Ravens have reached an agreement on a two-year, $30 million extension that includes $25 million fully guaranteed over the next two seasons. It is the largest deal in NFL history for a running back over 30 years old. Okay, however you qualify it for being a big deal, sweet, running back position back, and here we are a year later after a successful run, and that is the case. Remember, at the beginning of the season, Harbaugh said, we're not running a 30-year-old Derrick Henry 20 times a game. Like, that is not how we're going to win. And as the game season went on, it was like, yeah, we are actually going to feed this guy. He's a special athlete. He takes care of himself. He's committed to the profession. What a perfect fit over there in Baltimore.
Derrick Henry ran 16 for 84 and a touchdown in the first matchup, or sorry, the last matchup with the Bills on the divisional round, a game that the Bills won. So
remember, Derrick Henry, by the way, has that weird diet where he doesn't eat until 4 o'clock p.m.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not remember that. I did not know that.
He eats like a banana, like during before practice, but like during the season, I think he doesn't eat until like four or five.
Okay.
There's some weird, I mean, Allen doesn't eat on game days, right? So there's some weird diet stuff in the league, and I think he's one of them.
Well, there's a point I wanted to make about Derrick Henry along with James Cook as well. Here you have both the Eagles and the Ravens signing big money running backs from another team as like a finishing piece.
Yeah.
And then after a year, just deciding, how about we just give you a raise? They didn't have to do that. It is kind of funny how the young running back in the form of Cook, he's not proven it. I wouldn't dispute that, to the level of Henry or Barkley, and he's definitely not on that tier of player. But when you're young and on that rookie deal, it's, you go out and prove it. And here in this case with Henry and Barkley, they've done so much that their teams are just
tripping on themselves to give him more money.
What I will say, though, that might be a little bit different is what the – I don't know if the Eagles accomplished this, but with Henry, Henry's on a bigger contract, $8 million. You know, it's not 20.
Right.
But an extension for him might lower his cap hit this year. Whereas with Cook, because it's a rookie deal, I don't know how much you're really accomplishing that. So him going into a contract year, maybe the Ravens are trying to save themselves some space. They just had a safety. Then they're starting safety, just tears Achilles out for the year.
Yep.
So maybe they're about to go bring in some veteran safety. They need a little space. Whereas Cook, I'll have to look what Cook's number is, but I don't think you're really saving much if you were to extend him right now.
No, his cap hit is not very big right now. It's 5.7, so you would probably get that down. But whatever. I don't think the Bills would be motivated to do that necessarily. For the cap hit sake, you would do it just because you want to get him locked up. It was enough to get me looking at free agent running backs next year.
Next year.
Just to say, these two good to great teams decided, let's go hit the free agent market. Who's the next running back that becomes available that is thought of this way? There really aren't many. It's Breece Hall. It's James Cook. That's another point about what the Bills decide to do with Cook. You could say next man up. You could say draft one. You could say free agency, whatever it might be. There are positions, of course, that they will commit to. There are positions that they will decide this is worth it. This money is worth it. And where have they done that? Where have they said it's worth paying this guy one of the top salaries in the league? They've done it at center.
I was just gonna say center is the first thing.
They
came
did
mind.
It at
they made Mitch Morse the highest paid center ever at the time.
They did it with receiver. They did it with Diggs when they gave him his extension. They of course did it with Allen.
They've done it with edge rusher with Vaughn.
Edge rusher, huge contract at edge. A lot of their moves are proactive. When will they in free agency again dip into the time to pay as much as it takes? You know, this offseason's done, so it'll all depend on how this season goes, but. Kind of makes me think, when Henry was available, we didn't really talk about them signing Derrick Henry.
Not really.
And Baltimore did it, and it has worked out for them, and now they just extended him again. So we'll see how long that lasts.
I mean, that could be through the trade market, too. Jonathan Taylor, after this year, has no guaranteed money on the final year of his deal, and the Colts could be, you know, blowing things up. He'll be 27. So that would qualify, wouldn't it? You want to go trade for Jonathan Taylor and make him a $17 million a year running back and do that instead of James Cook?
The position gets paid at the top. You could talk a lot about replacements and how easy it is to replace, and I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah.
But at the top, it's getting paid, probably because it got behind in terms of the market value.
I might expect the next time they do that, they go whale hunting and they decide, okay, we're going to go back. We're going to pay this top of the market value to get it here. I'm just going to bet on it being edge rusher every time.
Yeah.
That maybe it's not Trey Hendrickson here because of the timing and because it's the Bengals you'd have to trade with. But a guy like that, where, okay, this edge rusher is going to cost you $30 million a year, and that's the position you're targeting. It might just end up being Joey Bosa.
If Joey has a great year.
Yeah, like I think they'll probably slow play him and make sure he's healthy for the playoffs, but if he comes out and is just amazing and has 15 sacks and he's one of the best, looks like one of the best edge rushers in the league, then they'll have to decide, do they want to keep him? And after a year like that, you might have to pay him huge money, right?
Yeah.
And that'll be an interesting test if that's to happen. You'll be happy if that test ends up coming because he had a great year. Because I would think if that situation plays out where Bosa hits the ceiling for what he could be in 2025, that they will lock him up. That if it costs $20 million plus to keep him around, maybe close to 30 if he has like a huge season, that's what they want. They want the star pass rusher. They've been chasing it. And if they have it here, that they're not going to let it slip.
803-0550. And 1-888-552-550. The schedule release videos. Every team does one, right? And who won? Maybe you'd spend your time watching these. The Bills was, I like the Bills. It was good.
Allen Iverson.
It was AI. Bean and Allen talking about, have AI do the schedule release video. Have AI do it. And then they cut to Allen Iverson, which was pointed out to me this morning on Twitter. Is that Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady that make a call?
Oh.
How do they get AI?
Gotta be.
Right? Hey, hold on a second.
I mean,
let me make a call. I got his number.
Would Josh Allen just have Allen Iverson's number in his phone?
Possible.
He could.
In the video, Iverson basically says, "I'll do it because of Josh Allen." So
I bet you're right, though, that the Vince Carter maybe or McGrady are the ones that make the call.
Maybe.
He would not say "Go Bills" at the end.
Yeah.
He kind of smiled because I think he's a Philly guy, so he's probably
he wants to say "Go Birds."
Yeah. So they're like, "Can we get a Go Bills?" And he smiles and he said, "Go Josh Allen."
All right, fair enough.
So that's enough, I guess.
I've not seen all 32 NFL schedule reveal videos.
Did you get a hold of the Colts one before they deleted it?
I did. That was a Minecraft one. It was kind of funny.
The Chargers also did Minecraft.
That's right, they did. But it's over because the Titans won. The Titans.
And they already have the GOAT of this, which was the fans standing on Broadway guessing the team name. Yeah. So the Titans are the champions.
Again, it's a dynasty. The Titans are a dynasty. The Titans treated it like a drug commercial, like a pharmaceutical commercial. Mm-hmm. Did you see it, Josh? You got to see it.
It's so good.
Owen, you got to see it. The first part of it is fine. You know, Schedule Rizzy is what it's called, this drug, and people are throwing a football around. And then they list the side effects. And basically what the side effects are, I won't spoil it for everybody, it's they list the teams they're playing, and then they identify them with a side effect.
Yep.
So the Chiefs logo shows up, and they say, nausea. And on and on and on, and it is, you can't do better. You can't do better.
Yeah. The Chargers, I will give applause to, though. They, every year, come with something that's at least a little bit spicy.
Last year was anime. Right? A couple years ago.
This year they did their Minecraft, and within the video, it goes to a Starbucks where there's a Minecraft version of Jordan Schultz and a Minecraft version of Ian Rapoport, and they start fighting.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Which is pretty good.
One quirk of the schedule. Make this the stat of the day, right? Let's do a stat of the day. Brought to you by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit empireelectricians.com. Stat of the day is that we are getting a game for the first time since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
There is a matchup of what? It was a fun one.
Since 2006?
For the first time since 2006, we will have a matchup of what?
The last...
That's 19 years since this happened.
The last two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. Last two MVPs. I don't know.
Left-handed quarterbacks.
Oh.
Two left-handed quarterbacks will start a game for the first time since 2006.
Wait a minute. Interesting. So Tua and Penix?
Yep.
Okay. 2006 is the last time this happened? Ooh, I want to get this.
Yes. You can get one of them. I don't think you'll get the other.
Matt Leinart?
No.
Okay. Michael Vick?
Yes.
And
I did not remember this guy to be left-handed.
Oh, well, that's crazy. You got to anyone that's left-handed, you would know them as left-handed.
I mean, I don't remember this guy throwing a pass. He did, presumably. He did a lot.
Can I get the team?
Bucks?
Wow, that wasn't helpful at all. Tampa, lefty. Yeah.
Not Steve Young.
Thank you. Josh Freeman wasn't a lefty. 2006.
2006.
Is this guy like a career backup?
No. I feel like he started and then he was done.
He started and then he was done.
I could be wrong about
Highly
that.
Highly drafted?
No.
No.
Third round pick, maybe? Son of another NFL quarterback?
Oh. Chris Sims?
Chris Sims.
Okay.
Vic and Sims.
I do remember him as a lefty, but...
First matchup of lefty quarterback since 2006.
Wow.
There you go. Howard picks the Bills at the top of the hour. The first official picking of the Bills. If he doesn't go 16-1, people are going to be mad. We got expectations this year, people. We'll get to that. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
All right. Well, back to the NFL, back to the Bills. The schedule coming out tomorrow night. The draft, you'll remember the name Elijah Badger.
Sure, Florida receiver. Trapasso liked him a lot.
Exactly. Did you know he was in Kansas City?
I guess not.
Was he a undrafted free agent signing of theirs? Then I feel like that sounds somewhat familiar to me. There's a reason I even asked that. I think he went undrafted, and that's how he ended up there.
That's correct. UDFA.
And I did see that, and it annoyed me that someone Chris liked.
Why is it always the Chiefs?
Went to Kansas City, right. Right.
They have Jalen Royals, who was maybe a fourth-round pick.
Right.
And we talked about him, too, as we've – and it's not believe it or not, it's not every day anymore with the wide receiver stuff. Like, the draft is behind us, and a lot of that, I guess, controversy that stemmed from it is, too, at least for now. But I had said, like, for me, the fourth round was the whole point because there were a couple – including Royals. There were a couple of interesting options there. Or even the third, but the Bills at first were not in the third round. Like, that was really, I think, the pocket because of two things. The players, you know, players like Royals and maybe other people would have different names that seemed to have potential to really make it in the league. And then also how that drops off when you get into the sixth and the seventh round. The receiver hit rate is very poor. It is mostly for all of day three. But in the fourth round, I can talk myself into this is a guy. Like, I would be doing that with Jalen Royals and the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody that I can imagine being on the field and helping them. We were looking yesterday at the rankings that Warren Sharp tweeted of all the teams by their wide receiver cap hit. And Kansas City is right near the bottom because their guys are so young. They haven't had to extend anybody yet. Worthy, Rice. Now, this guy's a rookie, so obviously him.
Right. Hollywood Brown, is modest contract for a second cheap. Year in a row. Yeah. Well, the pick, see, this is why, like, when it all happened, I was not as hot. Like, I liked the Jalen Royals' name came up. He was one of any number of a half a dozen or so guys that we might have talked about that could be in that sort of range, Saturday pick. I really liked the Deion Walker pick, and they moved to do that, right? Or did they stay put? Okay, that's pick 109. So that's ahead. I just looked. Royal was pick 133.
Mm-hmm.
But I think – oh, no, it was Sanders they moved way up to go get, wasn't it?
In round two.
I'm trying to remember if they moved at all for Walker. But anyway, that would have been the pick. That's the round anyway. I don't know. I think I'm mistaken about them moving up. I think that was only the Sanders pick. But I really like the Walker pick. Like, I respect a lot that he had a down year this year, and off of the year before, he looked like a player that would be a first-round player, maybe even a high first-round player. So I maybe, you know, let's take a shot that fills a need if it hits. Like, that could be a really nice value pick. So I wasn't mad. I wanted a receiver. I've wanted a receiver for a few years, but I wasn't really bent about it at all because I like the Walker pick. And I feel like Royal was, I don't know, he's not the last receiver pick, but it was like the last of the guys that we had thought about.
Right.
I think. And so
that's where I was.
I don't know if I'm sitting at the draft and it's my pick and both guys are in play and it's reasonable to consider either guy here, I can't tell you for sure I wouldn't have just drifted to the receiver like out of habit, but I really like the Deion Walker pick. And that really, to me, mitigated how bent I was, anyway, about them not doing anything until they did on, with their last pick with Prather. So, I hope that works. I guess it's a long way to go. Who doesn't, right? But I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, it might be the most interesting year I can think of for talking about their defensive line and combinations and pecking order and all of that stuff. It's all the draft picks plus Bosa plus the two guys who are suspended. Eventually we'll get there. There's just a lot of new pieces and they have some holdovers too, like just how they do it. It's not the topic that I rush to very often, no pun intended, is like how they're lining up front. Okay, there's a rotation. Oh, got a couple guys in free agency. Okay. Also not to me, like, how make or break, this is where I'm going to either win or lose this game, relative to quarterback, obviously, and other things. But I think this will be a fun year for sort of monitoring camp. You know, like,
yeah, there's there are a lot of new bodies. Yeah, that's right. You just said that. I mean, these draft picks, I mean, provided Walker's healthy, I feel like he's in the rotation. I think Landon Jackson, the third round pick, the edge guy, is in the rotation. TJ Sanders absolutely is in the rotation. And that's with Rousseau and Epinesa and Oliver and Daquan Jones still already here. And I haven't even mentioned Bosa and Hoyt and Ogunjobi. Like, that's a makeover.
Yeah, it is.
Is really what they've done up there. You know, it all has to work, obviously, for it to be impactful. But it's pretty dramatic what they've done up there.
Yeah, just taking a break from when will the games be
right
to who's on the team. Just a little bit of a diversion there.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.